We're going to defer item H to a future judicial council meeting. That's trial court allocation, restoration of benefits. And we're going to hear item I, juvenile dependency, court-appointed counsel funding reallocation. But before I invite the panel up, I believe, or you may at this time if you care to, I'm going to turn it over to Justice Miller for the public comment.
We do have public comment on this matter. It is something that's very important, and we have a number of individuals who would like to speak. Our first speaker will be Rhonda Burgess, who's speaking for a group. So Honorable Rhonda Burgess will have 3 minutes. And if Honorable Burgess could come forward, and then if Judge Shauna Schwartz, if you could meet at the gate right there, and we'll have you next. So you may proceed, and you have 3 minutes. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Good morning, counsel. My name's Rhonda Burgess, and I'm the presiding judge of the juvenile court in Alameda County. Thank you for allowing me this time to address the council. Letters on this issue have already been submitted to this body from Judge Winifred Smith, our presiding judge, and Leah Wilson, who is the court's chief executive officer. Judge Smith is currently working on the court-appointed dependency work group, and CEO Wilson staffed the court-appointed dependency council working group and helped develop the methodology that generated these findings and recommendations in 2007. I've had the benefit of speaking extensively with both of them about the issues and considerations which were on the table in 2007. And the expectations of the work group regarding future considerations that would be important for the council to assess and consider moving forward. Well, today is that future. And my comments relate specifically to recommendation number 7, which advises a joint working group of the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee and the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee be established to review the caseload funding model for court-appointed dependency counsel. In order for this to be useful, it must be convened immediately to inform the planned fiscal year 2015-2016 reallocation. To move forward on this allocation, with an allocation of this size, without taking into account the current landscape, and to base it on outdated data from 2007, I think would be injudicious and ineffectual.
1 minute.
Particularly since the data is available and could be used to produce an accurate picture of the funding needed. It's difficult to imagine any benefit that could be realized otherwise. I urge that the consideration should also include all aspects of the current model, not just the number of cases, but also the financial assumptions and underpinning the model. All of us in this room share an understanding of the great value and benefit to children and families as a result of what happens on this important issue. And irrespective of the impact on any particular court or courts, sound public policy suggests that if the current data is available, that it be used as the basis for any reallocation methodology. Thank you.
Thank you. Judge Shauna Schwartz, and then if I could have Andrew Kane approach the swinging door. And you have a minute and a half. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Shauna Schwartz, and I am the supervising judge of Juvenile Dependency Court in Santa Clara County. I have been supervising there for about 5 years, but have had the pleasure of spending 11 of my 13 years on the bench in juvenile dependency. I want to speak to you about recommendation 2, first of all. Looking at these new allocations over the next 4 years. We understand that the first year is probably inevitable and it's going to be pretty painful. But before the council votes on years 2 through 4, I urge you, as Judge Burgess did, to take a hard look at recommendation 7 and not just review the methodology, but to actually revise it based on data that is available to you now, rather than going with the current methodology, which is based on stale data and doesn't consider some of the new laws which have increased caseloads, as well as the fact that therapeutic courts take more time but are more beneficial to parents and to families. 2008 is when Santa Clara County joined DRAFT, and I think our county is an example of how DRAFT is working well. We have amazing reunification rates for families. Because the draft funded our attorneys at a rate that was not overfunding, but that intentionally funded them to address the concerns that were brought up by the media back in 2008 when we were all viewed in a rather harsh light. I urge you to look at the families and the children, not turn back the clocks to 2008 when things weren't going as well as they can be going. Yes, all counties are underfunded, but please look at recommendation two. The years two through four are need to be addressed in an appropriate fashion rather than making the cuts as recommended. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Andrew Kane, and then if I could have Jill McInerney come forward and stand at the gate. Minute and a half. Thank you.
Good morning, members of the council. My name is Andrew Kane, and I am a supervising attorney with Legal Advocates for Children and Youth in San Jose. Our firm represents approximately 90% of the children in Santa Clara County's juvenile dependency system. From the perspective of a county not in crisis, I come to you today to speak of successes, acknowledge realities, and ask the council to take a measured approach to these recommendations. In the approximate 7 years that my county has been a part of the draft program, we have seen that caseloads are fairly manageable, turnover is minimal, clients are contacted more frequently, and attorneys are better prepared. Notwithstanding these achievements, I have come to accept the reality that reallocation is inevitable. Inequities and current funding distributions exist and they must be addressed. Yet these inequities intersect with other realities, namely our involvement in a larger system that is woefully underfunded and the politics governing efforts to cure this funding gap. Balanced with the backdrop of the aforementioned damage and methodology long overdue for revision,
30 seconds.
All of this information leads to the following conclusions. A one-year reallocation, as recommended by the Trial Court Budget Advisor Committee, is appropriate. Not only will it begin the process of healing the crisis counties, it will be a show of good faith to Sacramento that inequities are being addressed. Second, the methodology used to determine each county's need must be reworked in a timeline that balances the need for the working group to consider all information, providers to have enough time to make sound budget decisions, and Sacramento to have enough information to consider proper funding. And three, any decisions beyond fiscal year 2016 should be deferred until after the council has adopted the new methodology.
Time.
I thank the council for the opportunity and for its attention to this issue.
Thank you very much. Jill McInerney, who's speaking on behalf of a group, 3 minutes, and then if Jennifer Turner could come to the swinging door, and you may proceed. Thank you.
Esteemed members. On behalf of San Francisco Council for Families and Children and with the unanimous support of the Bar Association of San Francisco, I am asking the Judicial Council to fully fund dependency attorneys statewide and to require that a new funding methodology be developed within the next year. The Council has a responsibility to get this right because we as dependency attorneys, what we do and how we do it sometimes makes the difference between life and death. Every dependency practitioner that I know holds a family in their hearts, a mother killed at the hands of her abuser after obtaining a restraining order, an infant who returned home too soon and died from unexplained causes. What we do matters, and what this council does today matters. We can all agree that the inter-county fighting about how to divvy up insufficient resources must end. Regardless of where a child or parent lives in the state of California, he or she should have access to a highly qualified, well-resourced attorney. We understand and appreciate that this council is willing to do whatever it takes to gain additional funds from the governor. But while the governor may not care about the details, we do. The current funding methodology must not only be reviewed, it must be completely revised. San Francisco is standing up today because we are being told that we have more money than we need to adequately represent parents and children. This is simply not true. Redistribution should not happen without solid data and an accurate economic model. The factors highlighted by the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee specifically outline some of the many flaws in the current model. We know that there is no parity in salaries for attorneys who represent parents and children versus those who represent the agency. In San Francisco, city attorneys earn almost double that earned by children and parents' attorneys. We know that the calculation for overhead costs is completely outdated. In San Francisco, the cost of commercial real estate has risen by 100% since this model was developed. We know that the current method for counting dependent children in each county is grossly inaccurate. In San Francisco, we have over 800 more clients than the current funding model attributes to us. If even these three data points were corrected, San Francisco's budget would be completely different and probably not subjected to any cuts at all. And this is the problem statewide. The nice, neat percentages on the spreadsheets before you are false. A revised, trustworthy methodology must be developed before confidence in the Judicial Council's distribution of funds is restored. This council must require the Joint Working Group to develop a new funding model within the next year. This council must come back next year with new funding recommendations and new money from the legislature. This council must fully fund dependency representation statewide. On behalf of the Bar Association of San Francisco and San Francisco Council for Families and Children, I thank you for your deep consideration.
Thank you. Jennifer Turner and David Myers is next. A minute and a half.
Good afternoon, I believe, ladies and gentlemen of the council. Thank you for the opportunity to address you today on this very important issue. I'm going to go quickly because I'm in full support of what Ms. McInerney just shared with the council today regarding her position and San Francisco's position on where we are today with the dependency council crisis. I believe that there's more agreement in this room than may readily be apparent. I think everyone agrees that the current funding model doesn't work. We've got counties in crisis. No one denies that. But we also, I believe, all agree that the proposed model that is part of today's recommendations also does not work. It is based on faulty data. No one is here to dispute that. On behalf of San Diego and Dependency Legal Group, I am asking that the court, or excuse me, that the council require that, in fact, the new methodology be developed by the Joint Working Group by next April so that we can look at those results before this
30 seconds.
Before this council implements plans to transition away from the existing funding model. We understand there are political realities that must be dealt with. We understand that that might entail a first-year cut to most of us. But we would ask that the court not act on years 2 through 4 until it has in hand a substitute model that it is reliable. Thank you.
Thank you. David Myers and Marcy Daniluk is next. Minute and a half. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ladies and gentlemen of the council, my name is David Myers. I'm Chief Operating Officer of Dependency Legal Services, where we represent children and families in Humboldt, Mendocino, Lake, Sonoma, Marin, and Stanislaus. From 2005 to 2012, I served right here as staff to this Judicial Council, the Blue Ribbon Commission on Children in Foster Care, and worked full-time as the senior attorney of the draft program. We are in support of the year one recommendations before you, and also ask you to revisit this next year when additional funds and an updated methodology should allow you to take a more realistic look at the state of dependency representation in California. What has troubled me throughout this process is the lack of discussion regarding why these funding disparities exist in the first place. This was a conscious and deliberate decision made two times by this council in 2004 and 2007 based on a simple premise: an investment in quality representation will lead to better child welfare outcomes. This was, of course, why the draft, pilot, and ultimately program were created.
30 seconds.
8 years later, we're in a moment where the narrative has been shaped by recession, branch-wide crisis, and significant changes to dependency practice. But what I would ask you to keep in mind as we take next steps is, let's recognize and defend our successes. One quick example. In Mendocino, where Children's Council had never even met with their clients, a small amount of extra money was spent to lure my partner and our CEO there, who literally writes the book on juvenile dependency law, Matthew Bender version, that is. During his time there, he spearheaded the establishment of the Dependency Drug Court and taken the lead in securing grants for this county to date that have totaled more than $3.5 million. The reunification rate there has increased by more than 24%, and those who participate average a reunification 13.6 months sooner. The average cost to taxpayers to house a child in foster care can run, arguably, about $30,000 a year. You may reflect, your chart reflects our counties as overfunded, but it is more accurate to refer to the savings we have generated and the families we have helped as return on investment.
Thank you. Marcy Daniluk and then Annalisa Chung is next. Thank you. Minute and a half.
Hello, my name is Marcy Danilup. I grew up in the court system in foster care group homes and the children's shelter. The DA was my attorney. I rarely spoke with her, and I was rarely transported to my court hearings. I felt completely alone and lost in the system as I was being shuffled around from one placement to another. In 2005, my own children were removed due to my care of my drug addiction and choosing to stay in a domestic violence relationship. I was completely devastated that history had repeated itself. I remember feeling so ashamed. Most of all, I felt frightened for my children, that they would be lost in the system with no voice. I remember so clearly the first day at court. I was greeted by an attorney, and I kept thinking to myself, this isn't going to go well. It's going to be just like how it was when I was younger. Instead, my attorney listened to me. She gave me clear directions, suggestions, and her business card. My attorney would call and set up face-to-face time with her in her office, as well as being prompt returning my phone calls.
30 seconds.
I didn't feel alone. I felt like my attorney was my go-to person. The time I spent with her made me feel like I made a huge difference in my case. I didn't feel alone, and I was like I was a youth in the system. I signed up for dependency drug treatment court, which was voluntary. My attorney and mentor parent would be at my drug court hearings as well as my legal hearings. On March 11, 2015, I celebrated 11 years clean. I successfully completed my case plan, and I have both my children in my care. I currently am employed as a mentor parent. I have been for 8 years by the same office that once represented me in 2005. In my experience as a youth and as a parent in the dependency system, it is clear to me that I was successful and with my kids benefited from the time and dedication of our attorneys. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Annalisa Chung, and Robert Patterson is next. Minute and a half.
My name is Annalisa Chung, and I am the Chief Executive Officer of Dependency Advocacy Center. You just heard from Marcy, who is herself a success story. She has since helped countless others achieve similar successes for their families. Her service as a mentor parent in our dependency drug court exemplifies another success, how creative and innovative programs in Santa Clara County are working to support the children and parents that we represent. Counties in crisis must be a priority. The solution, however, cannot be to act first and only then review the methodology upon which a four-year reallocation plan is based. That is not what was done with WAFM, and it is not a sound approach now. Approval of the first year 1090 reallocation appears to be an inevitable step toward re-engaging the legislature. The significant adjustments proposed in years 2 through 4, however, will gradually but certainly begin to undo the successes like therapeutic drug courts and the mentor parent program that are improving outcomes for families today, a fate that can be avoided by the prompt development of a current and accurate methodology. I join with my colleagues who you've heard today in requesting that this recommendation that calls for a mere review of a model that we know to be flawed instead require the development of a new methodology. We ask also that this council strike from recommendation 2 any reallocation plans beyond fiscal year 16 and have the new methodology inform further reallocation and support a more accurate funding request to the state in fiscal year 2017. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Robert Patterson, next is Dane Burcham. Thank you. Minute and a half.
Thank you. Good morning, honorable members of the Judicial Council. My name is Robert Patterson. I am Minors Counsel in Santa Cruz. I have 2 associates as Minors Counsel. I also am here speaking on behalf of 2+ parents' attorneys. It is our hope that the larger counties that need financial help to improve their results can be assisted without decimating or so reducing the level of services provided in counties that have proven to be successful. We understand that a contract allocation of 1090 may be inevitable to help struggling counties, but this cut will not affect the amount of time, workload, or effort put in by our attorneys in our county. We have a small county. We have some other common issues with other counties and some specific issues to our counties that the funding methodology does not take into account and needs to be looked at before further cuts are made. We have 1 full-time dedicated dependency court that is staffed full-time by all of the attorneys that I've mentioned. Currently, there are a number of disqualifications against the judge in that court, so we have to staff a second court, increasing our workload. There are other things, changes in the law regarding psychotropic medications that are adding to our workload, as we have to oversee them now under the law with a much greater scrutiny. I agree with all of the comments made by my colleagues previous to today, previous to myself, I'm sorry. So I will not reiterate those. Our dependency court system has used our best practices for years, and this is due in part to the skill of our attorneys. I urge you to support them.
Thank you. Next is Dane Burcham, and then after that, Deborah Bennett. A minute and a half. Thank you.
Good morning, Chief Justice and Judicial Council members. My name is Dane Burcham. I am the Executive Director of Children's Advocacy Group in San Bernardino County. We are a children's law firm. We've been representing children in that county for the past 12 years. I'm here today to ask for your support for the reallocation of funds and for an equitable distribution based on the workload. You've heard this already today, but San Bernardino County is the largest county in the state of California, fifth most populated and one of the most economically depressed counties in the state. Having said all of that, we are one of the lowest funded counties in the state. We currently have three courtrooms hearing dependency cases. We're trying to open a fourth but have no funding to put attorneys in that court. We have just under 5,400 children in foster care. The number of the cases...
30 seconds.
The number of those children that we represent are between 4,900 and 5,100. We cover approximately 20,000 square miles of ground in our county. We have to see all of those children. Yet we are funded with a limited budget that allows for the employment of five attorneys and three social workers, which obviously exceeds the maximum caseload allowed by five times. This is not only overwhelming, it's impossible. I don't have to tell you that the area of law that we practice in is very difficult. It's hard to find lawyers that will practice
Thank
in
you.
This area.
Thank you. Deborah Bennett. And then next is Michelle Galise.
Good afternoon. My name is Debbie Bennett. I'm here on behalf of the dependency attorneys for Merced County. We are here asking for a reallocation of funds. When I first started in dependency court in 1997, I had a caseload of between 125 and 150 cases with a part-time investigator. When it came time for the 2004 time study, I was right in line. I had 188 cases with a part-time investigator. However, since 2004, there have been increased responsibilities for attorneys, especially minors counsel, and that's what I am. We now represent these children to the age of 21. We represent them in other courts when they're subpoenaed as witnesses. We attend IEPs, expulsion hearings. We fight with the schools when they've lost credits. We have to have knowledge of mental health issues, psychotropic medication, educational rights, and LGBT rights. We talk with parents, foster parents, relatives, coaches. But the most important is we need to speak with the children. And without the children and without their trust, then we can't help them. Minors counsel is often the only lifeline for these children. It's really sad at graduation when I'm the only person there for the child. We're in dire straits in Merced County. I now represent 575 children and 25 parents. The other four attorneys are part-time attorneys. So we're asking today to help Merced County so we can help our clients. Thank you.
Thank you. Michelle Galise, and next is Danielle Butler Vapi. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chief and members of the council. My name is Michelle Galise. I come from San Bernardino County on behalf of our parents today. I just want to say I appreciate Judge Anderson's Siegel commentary earlier. We have a lot of seagulls here before you today, and I'm hoping that you will help us all figure out how to adequately fund and adequately and evenly and equally and equitably split up the limited dollars that you do have to fund dependency counsel in California. The biggest, the most prominent thing that stood out to me today in the packets that you all received, including the letters, was the word triage. We are running emergency rooms, not courtrooms. This is it's ridiculous, the caseloads we have. As parents counsel, we have 200, 300 clients, and those clients call us on the phone and they need our help, and there's no one there to do the work for them. As Ms. Burcham said, there are three open departments in San Bernardino right now for a county of 20,000 square miles. These people
30 seconds.
Have to travel or be on teleconference and try and get with their lawyers in the few minutes they have before court. And it's just not workable. It doesn't seem fair that other counties have to lose some money for us to get some money, but when you have a finite amount of money, that's the only thing that can happen. We're urging you to adopt the recommendation of the trial court budget subcommittee that made you today. Thank you.
Thank you. Donielle Butler Poppy and then Leslie Himmoff next.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice and members of the council. My name is Danielle Butler Vappi. I'm one of the law firm directors for Los Angeles Dependency Lawyers. LADL represents over 22,000 parents and legal guardians in Los Angeles County. Yet we are the only draft county that is not funded at the recommended amount. And as you already know from all the other speakers, the recommended amount is clearly not what our need is. We have attorneys in over 22 courts. Some of them have caseloads of 250. Some of them are toppling 300 clients. The question is not whether or not there should be reallocation. That answer is obvious. The question is how quickly should this process take place? This should not be a competition among the counties. This judicial council is charged with the responsible distribution of funds statewide. You must not wait. You must act now. The burden of a restricted judicial budget should not fall on the shoulders of just certain counties. We are all working hard and struggling to provide adequate representation to our clients. Some of us have just been doing so at a great deficit for 8 years. The only equitable resolution for this ongoing mistake is an impactful reallocation now. The harm would be in doing nothing. We cannot wait on the legislature or the governor's office to increase funding to dependency representation without this change. While many of the counties will experience some gradual changes and have to adjust to a new normal, the inadequate funding, we ask the Judicial Council to adopt the recommendation today. Thank you.
Thank you. Leslie Himmoff and Michael Burns next.
Good afternoon. I'm Leslie Himmoff, the Executive Director of the Children's Law Center of California. We represent 30,000 children in Los Angeles County and 3,000 children in Sacramento. So I have the distinct privilege of being here as a donor county and as a recipient county today. My Sacramento office will suffer a little bit as a result of the proposed 90-10 allocation, and my Los Angeles office will benefit a little bit as a result of the new proposed 90-10 allocation and then the remaining allocations going forward over the next 4 years. I would join with Ms. Vappi's comments as with regard to this council's responsibility to the entire state. Children that are abused and neglected, parents who are working desperately hard to have their children come back home don't know anything about county lines and funding ratios and proportions and formulas. They know that they need the help of a competent attorney who has a reasonable caseload, and it shouldn't matter where they live as to whether they receive that attorney and whether that attorney has the time to give them the attention that they need. I want to very quickly address recommendation number 6, which calls upon staff to develop a program that allows courts to seek reimbursements for costs related to complex trials and other events. It wasn't something I'd paid a lot of attention to until today, but for those of us that have contracts that require us to take 100% of all appointments, additional funds to the court for complex trials and other events will have no impact on our budgets or our ability to reduce caseloads or bring in a special attorney for a particular case. So when the work group, assuming these recommendations are passed today, looks at that, I would ask that to be considered as a part of that, because it doesn't necessarily flow to the attorney organizations as vendors. We are not necessarily privy to some of the different changes.
Time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Michael Burns and next, Neff Franks.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice and members of the council. My name is Michael Burns, and I'm the administrator for the Juvenile Defense Panel of Riverside County. We've been working with the courts and the AOC for 25 years, representing the families and children in that county. Currently, to put it in perspective, because I've heard a lot about we don't have any current data, We're contracted at $675 per case to represent children. I don't even know an attorney that would appear on a traffic ticket for that. Okay. Many of our attorneys, our minors counsel, have caseloads of 300 to 400 cases. When I looked at the caseload study, I see we're funded at 40% of what we should be, while other counties are funded at 120%. We're willing to do our part, and we have for 25 years, but we need help. We're in a crisis situation, and like the previous speakers indicated, the time is now. It's not for later. What I'm going to ask the council do is pass the...
30 seconds.
Thank you. Pass the motion for reallocation. I don't think any reasonable person in this room would consider only feeding half their children while they're giving the rest of the food to the other half of the children to make them better off. Please, don't fund only half your attorneys. We need the help, and we're asking for your help. Thank you.
Thank you. Neff Franks, and next will be Maria Corder. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Neff Franks. I'm with California Youth Connection, and we are a youth advocacy group for foster youth 14 to 24 in California. I am a former foster youth. I'm 22 years old, and I was in the system from 2007 to 2014. I can say that lawyers are needed. I do understand that there is a number problem. I believe that before you make any decisions, you need to come back with maybe more recent, relevant numbers. Everybody's been talking about it, and it is right. San Francisco is funded at 120%. However, I do believe that maybe that number is really off, and I think that if the numbers were right, it would balance out to maybe being about, I don't know, maybe 50% funded. I'm just wondering, when will we get the numbers right? Before you make a decision, you have to have all the information together. I had a lawyer who saw me when I needed help, when I was in
30
trouble.
Seconds.
And I can say, I can still call her to this day being emancipated as a foster youth, former foster youth. All I'm just asking is before you make any decisions, please go into your counties, do what you can do to bring the numbers back to another meeting, and then figure out where the reallocation should go. Thank you.
Thank you. Mariah Corder.
Hello, my name is Mariah Corder. I'm 15, and I'm from California Youth Connection, representing the Bay Area chapters. Despite coming from a supposedly overfunded county, I felt unheard and unable to connect and make a relationship with my attorney. I had been trying to reach out to her for over a year by email, phone, leaving messages with her receptionist, etc. I had the opportunity and in the beginning of that year to exit foster care and reunify with my mother. However, I didn't have anyone to advocate for that in court. Therefore, it didn't happen. Finally, I got in touch with my attorney and things really sped up. Over the next 2 months, I am in the reunification process and I'm having my case closed in June of this year. There is no overfunded counties right now. All youth and their families deserve adequate representation. Cutting services to some families is not the answer. We need to increase the funding throughout the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That concludes our public comment. I want to inform all of you, thank you. Your comments were very important, very informative, and very helpful for our discussion.
Thank you. And Justice Hull has a comment.
Yes, thank you, Chief. Before we get into Judge Earl's presentation, I just wanted to say that, as Justice Miller just noted, I and I'm sure all of us appreciate all of the very sincere and heartfelt comments made by the speakers who have spoken to us just now and those here in support of those. And I only want to observe and urge you to make those same sincere and heartfelt comments to your local legislators to see if we can get this branch funded properly. Thank you very much.
Thank you. This is item I. We welcome again Judge Lori Earle, Chair of the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, and Ms. Sherry Carter, Court Executive Officer, Los Angeles Superior Court, and Don Wells.
Thank you, Chief. I just want to start by saying we also appreciate the public comment. We had some of these folks provide public comment at our Budget Advisory Committee meeting, and we had a healthy debate, as you can see from the reflection of the recommendations that went for you. It was not a unanimous decision. We struggled with this, and I would caution everyone to understand that the terms that are used here are underfunded and overfunded, but overall statewide court-appointed dependency counsel still needs about $30 million more to be fully funded and to be able to meet the workload that these lawyers provide. So I would caution everybody about the use of those terms. I think it's misrepresentative of the overall statewide funding need. And because she does such a good job at it, I'm just going to turn directly to Sherry Carter and have her walk you through the recommendations.
And in light of the time, if you need me to do this a little faster, just signal me, Chief Justice, and I will do that. Court-appointed dependency counsel became state fiscal responsibility when it was part of the defined court operations that was ultimately funded by the legislature in the Trial Court Funding Act of 1997. I want to point out that when that transition from county funding to state funding occurred in 1997, those are the historical funding models that we still use today. So like the Trial Court Trust Fund that was from 1997, that was the catalyst for WAFM, today we are looking at the same funding model, and it actually broke my heart to see on your consent agenda that item B on your consent agenda was another funding model from 1997, and that was for the 1058. You authorized a subcommittee to look at that funding model too. And so it's time that we really need to start updating all of those funding models. In 2007, the Judicial Council adopted a workload model of 188 attorneys per client with a 0.5 investigator complement. I'm sorry, what did I say?
You meant clients.
Yes, I'm sorry. Client. I am going too fast. I'm going to slow down. 188 clients per attorney. In 2010, the court-appointed dependency counsel was reduced to a baseline of $103.7 million. As Judge Earl indicated, to meet the workload model of 188 clients per attorney, we would need $137.1 million. So we are significantly underfunded for the whole branch. The interesting piece, I read all of the written comments, and there were several comparisons between WAFM and Dependency Council. I want to point out there is a difference. For the Trial Court Trust Fund, there was not a workload model to allocate the money, and so we were using the historical models over and over again, which is why we created WAFM. Here, a workload model was developed in 2007 that has never been tied to the funding. And so it is a very different situation for that reason. If you use the workload model, which is based on data, and I'll talk about that in a minute, we are only at 76% of what funding we would need to have all of the courts at the same level. It's 76% funded of our need. So other than very minor adjustments, the courts are still at the historical levels from 1997. I'm going to kind of change my talking point slightly, Don, so it might throw you off. I want to clarify something that I think is really important now. It was primarily my suggestion that the workload model be reviewed. I'm the co-chair of this Dependency Council subcommittee, along with Judge Cope, who was the presiding judge of Riverside County. And we did not look at the underlying workload model, but we did identify there were several things that needed to be looked at. But when it comes to data, the data is not old. And I know that the way the report's been written, it makes it sound as if it's old. But let me talk about the data. The main driver of the workload funding model is child welfare caseloads as reported by each county's child welfare departments to the State Department of Social Services. They do that every year. That data is checked and posted on a website by UC Berkeley, working under contract with the Department of Social Services. That same data is used extensively by the Federal Department of Health and Human Services and the State Department of Social Services. Our workload model that these numbers were based on is refreshed every year with that same uploaded data. And a three-year average is applied so that the vacillations in filings are smoothed.
So it is not inaccurate. It is not old. It is current data. And I think that's a misunderstanding that we probably could have done a better job in clarifying in the report, because it makes it sound like it's old data, and it's not. It's refreshed every year with a three-year average. So why did I think that we needed to look at the data? It wasn't the data I was questioning. It was whether or not it was the right data. It's an old formula. So I didn't know whether or not, our group didn't know whether or not the child welfare data is the right way to count what should be funded. The real question was, are the numbers as reported by the child welfare departments to DSS the best indicator, the best measurement, or should we use court filings or a combination or some other data? That was really the question for me. So I went back after reading all of these letters, and actually I looked at it as co-chair. I did a lot of work at my court level to try to understand these the data. And I used two real courts that I'm going to call Court A, which receives less than 50% of the funding, and Court B that receives over 100% of the funding. And I asked Don to give me the most recent child welfare numbers reported through the end of calendar year 2014. And so for Court A, they have 5,800 kids under supervision with funding at $4.1 million, or $719 per kid. Court B has 1,700 kids under supervision with funding at $4.7 million, or $2,765 per kid. That is the most recent data there is. So then I said, okay, if we don't want to use that data and we wanted to use original petitions or court filings, what would those two courts look like and would there be a difference? Court A had 2,928 filings, or $1,425 per filing. Court B had 567 filings, or $8,289 per filing. So, regardless of what we look at, there's disparities in not tying a workload model to the funding, because we're still using the historical levels from 1997. So I wanted you to have that information about the filing data before I go into the recommendations, because I thought that was important to clarify, because it seemed to be unclear, and I thought there was a misunderstanding about the data being old. It's not old. It's updated every year, right, Don? Three-year average is applied, and I've now given you two examples if we used a different model with the same two courts and what it would look like. So I'm going to go directly to the recommendations unless anyone has questions on the data. Okay, the first recommendation is that the Judicial Council approve a process to allocate dependency court appointed counsel based on the workload model. Now, could the workload model be reviewed and refined? Certainly. We still do that with WAFM. WAFM is brand new, and we still have things on our parking lot, and we're still making adjustments. But we recommend that we commit ourselves to using a workload model in the future to fund dependency counsel funding. The second recommendation is that the existing funding be phased in over 4 years. The first year next year would be 10% based on the workload model and 90% based on the 1997 historical model. 16-17 would be 40% workload with 60% based on the historical model. 17-18 would be 80 with 20 being the historical. And that in fiscal year 18-19, all courts would be at the same funding level. We are hoping that as we get new money, and you'll see in a recommendation four, that as we are reallocating our existing funding, that as the governor and the legislature provides more money, we're all going to get up to 100%. The goal is we want to be at 100% for every county. Recommendation number three is that any court-appointed dependency council funding that is estimated to remain unspent at the end of each fiscal year be reallocated to the courts by workload using the formula that the Judicial Council approved in January 2015
and that this become a permanent policy. And specifically what you approved was that it would, that the caseload model would be used, that the unspent money would go to courts that are 90% or below of this average state funding model. They would receive 50% in January and the remainder in April. I want to point out this is one-time money. It's a good thing for some courts who have to use their local money to actually pay their dependency counsel because they don't receive enough. But it is one-time in nature, and it does not allow people to hire additional attorneys or to do anything else to make more permanent structural changes. Recommendation number four, which I consider the accelerant to this, is that any new state court-appointed dependency counsel funding above the current statewide level would be allocated to courts with a ratio of a historical-based funding to workload-based funding that is below the statewide average. So to say it another way, next fiscal year, assuming there's no new money, and I hope that's not true, but if our funding stays at 103.7 million, we're at 76% of our statewide funding level. Courts that are below that level would be allocated any new money above the 103.7 million based on their percentage of being under the average statewide funding level. So that would accelerate the courts below the average to catch up, and at some point we would all move up together. And so that's what that recommendation would do. Recommendation five would be to have judicial counsel staff develop a process to reimburse courts for unexpected and significant costs. That would include a reserve of $100,000 to be maintained by judicial counsel staff. It would also require judicial counsel staff to develop guidelines with an application and reimbursement process, that any unspent funds in the reserve would roll over until the next year, and that we would try to maintain this $100,000 reserve level, and that that process be approved by the judicial counsel by April of 2016 so that it would be available the following fiscal year. Our sixth recommendation is to provide the Superior Court of Colusa with court-appointed dependency counsel funding. Their county has been funding them and realized that it is a state responsibility, and they have notified them that beginning next fiscal year they will no longer fund it. And so we recommend that we include our sister court Colusa and that we fund them at 76% of the workload-based funding, which is the level, which is the average state level. Of course, as new money goes into the system, Colusa would move up with the rest of us. And then the seventh was to form a joint working group with the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee and the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committees to review the workload models. Again, not necessarily because there was some distrust of the data, because as you've heard me now say, the data is fresh, it's new, it's updated every year, there's a three-year average, but because we need to be committed as a branch that we look at all of these funding methodologies and workload measurements on a by at least every other year to keep them fresh so that we're not looking back 10 years from now wondering why we hadn't done it, because our funding now is based from our historical levels of 1997. So things to be included: should the attorney salaries continue to be based on an average salary by region or some other index that would be by county, whether the attorney salaries should be updated, whether the benefit costs in the model should are accurate or should they, whether they should be changed, whether the calculation of overhead costs should be updated, whether the state child welfare data reported by the counties is the best method for gathering workload data, or if court filings or a combination should be used, and whether the ratio used to estimate parent clients in the model is accurate or if it should be changed, and whether this is the right model for small courts. We thought that needed to be looked at too. We also said that these recommendations should be done very quickly so that they could be taken to the respective committees in time for the council to review the final recommendations in April of 2016. So that summarizes the recommendations, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Justice Hull.
Thank you, Chief. Ms. Carter, you mentioned the allocations in the event we did not get new money in succeeding fiscal years. And under recommendation two, the step up, if you will, workload-based funding versus historical funding, which is set forth there. I was wondering, under WAFM, we have established a system where any new money that comes to the branch for this for our use is allocated 100% on the workload model. Would that be the same here, or do I misunderstand?
It would. That would be recommendation four, okay. that any new money would go 100% to those counties where their funding is below the average funding for the state. So our average funding level for the state right now is 76%. So if we receive new money next year, that would go 100% to all of those counties that are below that 76% level.
And in succeeding years, that would continue until all counties are
at 100%. So when that new money comes down, hopefully the averages will rise as we do the reallocation and its new money flows into dependency council. The average will rise every year, we're hoping, until we all reach 100%.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. Next one came from Judge Rubin, then Judge Anderson, then Judge Stout, and then Judge So.
I guess I do have a data-related question, but I wanted to hear the whole presentation first. And it goes like this. So it's been reported to me, and I just want to ask you about this, that, in fact, data, and the example was given to me with San Diego, the data that was being used was the current budget money. The budget number was correct, but that the caseload information came from 06-07. You're reporting that this data comes from a centralized database. Was there any effort made to test the accuracy of those of the numbers we were getting from the centralized database to make sure they're up to date?
Don.
The committee, the working group of the committee did discuss that and decided that it was too big a task to tackle in a couple of months, and also that the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee should be brought in, since they then would be kind of talking about the content of the program. I would say that data is cleaned and tested by a number of folks in the executive branch and UC Berkeley, so it is looked at pretty carefully, but I think that it does need to be reconciled, and as Ms. Carter says, is it the right data source for the workload model?
Judge Anderson.
First and foremost, thank you to the speakers.
You're not on?
No, not on?
No, nonetheless, I'll try to speak up.
I'll go ahead and try to speak up first. Thank you to the speakers for letting us know your concerns. I do have a couple of questions for the group. But first and foremost, I know folks do not care for the language of overfunded and underfunded. Is there a way to describe what we're doing as percentage share of funding allocation available as opposed to overfunded and underfunded, so that we can describe people in terms of what their share is based on what's available as opposed to over and underfunded, and maybe get rid of those words? And I know that's extremely difficult to do.
So I reviewed the materials twice trying to find the word overfunded, and I didn't find it in the materials. I found it in the written comments, but in the Judicial Council report I didn't find those two words. And so I actually put in my talking points to define what that means, but was trying to help you with your time crunch. As the Judicial Council materials indicate, there are 26 courts that receive an allocation of more than 100% of workload-based funding. That does not mean they're overfunded. What it means is that those courts receive enough money for an attorney to have an average caseload of 188 clients or fewer. That's what that means. There are 16 courts that receive an allocation ranging from 50 to 100%. That means the attorneys in those counties have an average caseload higher than 188 clients. So I didn't see the word overfunded and underfunded in the Judicial Council report, just in the written
comments.
And thank you for that clarification. Okay. That was what I want folks to see, is where is the language coming from and where is it being used, so that we're all clear. Sometimes when we hear things, we adopt it as though it's fact, and so we need to make sure.
I didn't word search it, but I did review it twice.
Okay. And thank you. That's clearing that up. And maybe in time the language will change from others who are using it. And then I know the overriding decision of what we're doing today is how do we adjust percentage share to better equalize access to justice. And the other question is how fast do we adjust for equalizing percentage share, and that's basically what we're doing today. So my second question is there a disadvantage, or what are the disadvantages to revisiting the percentage share rate for 2017, 18, and 18, 19 next year, as opposed to what's listed in B, C, and D under item number 2? What are the advantages and disadvantages of not following that and just leaving B, C, and D blank and revisiting next year versus what you have here?
So I'm going to ask you to, if you would please turn to attachment 1. And I'm going to ask you to consider Kern County, because Kern County is the most under-resourced county in the state of California. And next year, when WAFM kicks in at 30% based on workload, Kern County will still be 40% underfunded for the trial court trust fund side. And if you look at Kern County, they only receive 65% of their need for dependency counsel. And so I looked at Kern County and actually found out that because they're so underfunded in this area, and that's a bad word, because they needed more money to pay their dependency counsel, they spent $276,000 of their local funding last fiscal year for dependency counsel. So that means our most underfunded county in the state of California, who also does not receive enough money for dependency counsel, had to spend $276,000 of their very limited money that could have been for staff for dependency counsel. And so I would ask you as the council members to consider those kinds of stories when you make the decision, the hard decision on, you know, the reallocation beyond, you know, for the four-year phase-in.
Correct. So basically what you're indicating, and then let me give Lori a chance first because I think she's going to answer as well. Is that correct? Because then I might not have the follow-up question.
Well, you asked what are the advantages or disadvantages of waiting and essentially approving a reallocation in year one but holding off on the other 3 years. And I think what Sherry has described is by waiting, those courts that aren't getting enough money are waiting to figure out if they do or if they have to use money out of their own budget. And these decisions come late in the fiscal year, and by late I mean April. And so it does not allow them to plan in order to see what's coming. At least if they know next year and in 2017-18 we're getting a little bit more money, they can make decisions differently.
And thank you very much for that explanation, because I think it assists us in looking at B, C, and D to know that it's just not something that just came out of let's look at arbitrary capricious numbers, but, you know, consideration for courts planning and budgets as well as trying to equalize access to justice. It's a phased-in approach, and sometimes it's extremely difficult to get there, but we got to get there some kind of ways.
And let me say, too, that when the working group gets together and comes up with a perhaps a change to the model, this, I think, would have to be revisited next year anyways.
Okay. Judge So, then Justice Ashman Gerst, Judge Rosenberg.
Judge Earl, I noticed that number two was recommended 15 in favor, 13 opposed, so it was a very close vote. Is there a reason why 4 years was chosen as opposed to 5 years or 6 years? It seems that one of the issues that's out there is there's not enough money, period. And we're going to make everybody mediocre or less unless we get more money from the legislature. And the council needs to make a conscious decision as to whether or not everybody is going to be underfunded. And so is there any reasoning for 4 years as opposed to 6 years? guess that's my question.
So I'll have Sherry answer that because I was not present when the work group considered that, but obviously I was present when the budget committee considered that. There are no winners and losers in this. Frankly, I thought 4 years was too long because if you look at the courts that are living at 9% of their funding need is one of the courts, but I think is Enyo. Waiting 4 years for them to even get up to 50% of their funding need is absurd in my opinion. So I think that it is not aggressive enough, but I recognize the other side of that. And I think you've said something very important, and that is we're all being forced to work at mediocrity. But it's not the council that's doing that. It's the governor and the legislature who are not making this a priority, in my opinion.
And to directly answer your question, there was no magic number to the 4 years. We did look at various options that actually went from 2 years to beyond 2 years. And 4 years is where it ended.
Justice Ashman Gerst, Judge Rosenberg, Judge Slough, Deborah Pohl, Judge Stout.
I'll make this brief. I want to thank everyone for coming who came and spoke and for the letters we received and assure everybody that we have read every single letter and have considered all of the issues. The question I have for the panel is there a thought to including, or has it already been done, the increase in the appellate caseload? Because of the same lawyers that are they're in the trial court and the dependency court, but they're also handling the appeals in front of us. And our caseload in L.A. Is 20% dependency cases. So I was just wondering if that's being factored in the computations.
The short answer is no. It's not part of the existing workload model because this is for work at the trial court, and I don't really know how they're funded at the appellate level, Don. The answer is no.
I'm sorry.
No, then maybe, just to bring attention to it, perhaps there could be a focus in the future on that issue.
Thank you. Judge Rosenberg.
In the interest of time, I'll make this really quick. I need to go back to basics, and I thank you for the report. I think a lot of thought went into it. But a lot of this is based on a workload model that was developed in 2007, before most of us, maybe any of us, were here on the council. I'd like to see that workload model. I'd like to see what it's based on, not necessarily in terms of a decision we need to make today, but long-term, as we revisit this subject, I'd like to understand what that decision was based on.
Well, I think that would be the point of the work group, since it was a model developed by the Family Juvenile Law Advisory Committee. It wasn't the budget committee that was involved. So,
but it came to the council in 2007.
It did.
And apparently the council approved it.
Yes.
I'd like to see it.
We'll get that to you. Judge Slam.
So I just respectfully, you're dinging on me, man.
Because I always like what you have to say.
Second that.
Lost my train of thought. That was very well timed. I just want to say that I must respectfully disagree that what we're doing is bringing counties that are better funded down to the level of mediocrity. We cannot, as this council that sits around this table, look at the numbers that we have before us today and see that there are counties that are being funded at 20% of their need and others that are funded at a much greater percentage and say that to bring them up is to bring them down to the level of mediocrity. I think it is to provide all of our children and their families up and down and across this state proper, adequate, well-trained, and sufficient counsel to represent them. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Judge Slough. Deborah Pohl and Judge Stout.
Thank you, Chief. I'd like to go back to Attachment 1, please, the Dependency Council funding dated April 17, 2015. And if I look at fiscal year 20, the column for fiscal year 2014 to 2015, there is an unallocated amount of $651,000 plus. And if you see that, Has that money been allocated? If so, when? If not, why hasn't it been? What's the point of this unallocated monies when we have people of counties that are underfunded?
Folks have mentioned the draft program, which is a program where the Judicial Council directly manages dependency council funding and contracts for 20 courts. And that amount is the amount in the draft budget for those 20 courts. It's not allocated specifically to any court, but is used for their when they have extraordinary expenses or conflicts. It has either been allocated to courts or in the process that the committee went through and the council approved in January, it will be reallocated to all the courts in need if it's not spent, actually, if it's not encumbered by this month.
So, because it says fiscal year 2014 and through 2015, will it be reallocated or dispersed to some county this year by the end of 2015?
It'll all be reallocated to courts this year.
Okay, thanks.
Yep. Thank you. Judge Stout.
Thank you, Chief. And again, my respects to Judge Earl and the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee for some incredibly challenging work here. And to staff, I've known Mr. Wilson's working together on the Foster Care Commission, and extremely talented and caring and of the utmost respect. I came here today preferring to delay recommendations 1 and 2. I understand the governor's desire to for some immediate implementation, and I certainly understand and respect that and appreciate that. I think the governor's agreeable with a rollout, if my information is correct. And I think our number one priority really has to remain with obtaining more funding, you know, from the legislature and the governor. I think when we talk about this working group and looking at the methodology, as I understand it, some of the economic indicators used were maybe back in 2004. And quite frankly, the Chief Justice's blueprint of $33 million, when we look at that, just the economic indicators, we're going to raise that $33 million, I'm quite sure. But again, I think our priority needs to be with obtaining more funding. I was pleased with our brief discussion in August with the Director of the Department of Finance. I was encouraged by that dialogue, and I certainly appreciate the Governor's recognition of this issue in his budget proposal comments. But I feel compelled here to state the obvious. We're talking about the need for competent, and I underline competent, legal representation for some of our most challenging and important cases. We're talking about the government's intrusion into the sanctity of the family and removing children and potentially terminating parental rights, and of course, on the other side, the protection of our most vulnerable children. I think we all agree there are significant historical funding inequities that need to be promptly addressed, and we do need to shift to a workload model. There's no doubt about it. In light of our recent efforts to eliminate historical funding inequities in the allocation of trial court funding and our recent adoption of WAFM, I would certainly hope that the legislature and the Department of Finance and the governor would trust us here that we are going to expeditiously and diligently work toward rectifying these historical inequities in dependency council funding, but I think we need to get it right. Instead of delaying recommendations 1 and 2, I've come around to what some of the earlier speakers have advocated, to adopt the recommendations, but as I understand, delay implementation of years 2, 3, and 4, kind of put the pressure on to get the workload or the working group comprised and working as expeditiously as possible. There's talk about having them come back at a time when this council will be prepared to act by April of 2016. And what I'm hearing from our speakers, and I certainly understand, get back much quicker. They'd love to have them back by the end of this fiscal year. I don't know if that's realistically feasible. I would hope it would be. because I certainly understand some of the budget planning, you know, concerns that have been raised. Again, I'll use the term overfunded and underfunded. I appreciate the clarification. Small rural courts are not going to have 188 cases per attorney. You know, the chart indicates that based on the percentage of Inyo County, for example, significantly over the amount that would be allocated under the workload model. I know personally that we're in the middle of a multi-year MOU, and the only way we could afford that to recruit and retain competent attorney was to use our former reserves, front load our funding in the first year, pay a higher amount of funding than we're paying in the second and third year. There is no way in the world that we can recruit and retain qualified attorneys for the amount of money being allocated under this particular model, let alone 75% of it. It just isn't going to happen. I agree the methodology does need to be re-examined or revised, and I appreciate among the items listed in recommendation number 7, page 3, to look at the methodology used for funding of small courts, much like we did with WAFM. You know, there the committee and the council recommended and implemented a minimum flooring for small rural courts. Given the different funding models for dependency, I don't know that a minimum flooring is necessarily the right approach here, but I certainly appreciate there's definitely a need to examine that issue, and again, hopefully very quickly, and come up with an appropriate modification of the methodology used for funding the small rural courts. I urge the council to look at the written comments of Mr. Myers. I think his judicial council fact sheet that he prepared and the correspondence of April 14th, I believe it was, I think his points are very well taken. I'm prepared to move at this time the adoption of the recommendations, but stay implementation of the rollout for years 2, 3, and 4 until we have receipt of the new methodology and recommendation. And again, I'd like to see a timeline on that where, again, the working group is formulated expeditiously. And we certainly have a report back absolutely no later than a date by which the council could act on this by April 2016.
At this time, there's still more people to be heard. I haven't heard a second to that motion, so I'm going to call on the following, and then I'm going to call on Judge Rubin. Judge Buckley, Jim Fox, and Judge Rubin.
I have a couple comments. First of all, I would strongly echo Judge Lau's comments. We have to get these courts that are at 300 to 500 case loads to something more reasonable. It's scary. There's just no other way to put it. So I would echo that. To those who made the, I also thank people that came to speak to us. I understand why you would want a very careful look at the standards, and I would point out that April of 2016 gives us ample time to analyze it and make the necessary changes if we believe some should be made before the next fiscal year. Judge Stout, I appreciate your motion. I can't agree that we delay on years 2 through 4. One, I think it does not address what was raised in the proposed budget by the governor as to a plan and a term ahead. I'm tempted, actually, at some point to push for 20% in year 1 rather than the 10%, and I won't bore you with what happened at the advisory committee's meeting, but I think to reach what we need to do for these children statewide, when we look at what our purpose is to look at what's the right thing for our state, for our courts, and for our children, I would urge everyone that we adopt the recommendations in its entirety, including years 2 through 4.
Jim Fox.
Yeah, initially, my position was that we should just adopt for 1 year and then defer and see what a reexamination of the workload model would result in. However, having heard Judge Earl's comments about the uncertainty of budgeting and what counties, what the courts may need to do for the upcoming fiscal year. What I would suggest we consider is adopting the recommendations as made and calendaring in April the report from the committee that is going to be re-examining. If there are suggested changes to the workload model by next April, we can change prospectively, but we would have taken action to basically provide certainty for all of the courts. So I would make that as a motion, that we adopt the recommendations and that we come back in April of 2016, hopefully with a completed review of the workload model, and any changes that would be recommended we would then implement.
So let me say, my understanding is you're making a substitute motion.
Well, actually, there was no second to the first.
There's no second to Judge Stout. Okay, so
I'll second Judge Stout. I think.
Okay.
So.
Because I think that there's. I'm hearing from just various corners that we just need to look a little
microphone.
I'm just hearing from various corners that we need to look more deeply at this data. I also agree with Judge Buckley's comments that this is a desperate situation and we need to get on this and we need to get. Adequate funding. It's not going to be the best funding because clearly we're not being funded adequately yet. But as the best funding that we can to all the counties, I would like to see this data tested though, because the premise of these motions to roll out 1 through 4 is this data is correct. And yet there has been at least some suggestion we should try to reconcile it, which we haven't done yet. And I would like to at least roll out year 1. And then if it turns out the data is correct, years 2, 3, and 4 are done. If it turns out it's not correct, then we're not committed to a course of action that will cause real trouble for a lot of the children up and down the state. So I'm going to second Dean.
So let me just be clear. Judge Stout has moved that we accept the recommendation. However, we stay implementation of years 2 through 4 rollout until the new methodology returns to this body in a report by April 2016. And you second that. I understood Judge Buckley's or Jim Fox's motion to be move recommendations, have them in place, continue to receive a report in April 2016 regarding the workload model, and consider whether at that point we change the rollout of years 2 through 4. But at least we have action pending because, as he indicated, as by the panel, Judge Earl, courts need to plan. They need to plan years out. So I understand you, Judge Rubin, to continue to second Judge Stout's motion?
Correct.
I don't know what the procedure is. I'm looking at Rosenberg because I'd like to second Fox's motion.
Wait, his phone is going to ding any second now.
No, I did. I'm sitting on it.
And then I get to revise as a
that would, if there is a second, then that I would look at as a substitute
That's
motion
right.
that has to be.
So is there a second at all to Jim Fox's motion?
Yes, I second.
Miller just did it.
Just Miller just second. So that's a substitute motion, but I hear there might be a friendly amendment coming.
Correct. I'd like to have a compromise amendment that might combine.
Well, let's hear. And we'll figure okay. if it's a third, second substitute
okay.
motion or
yeah.
friendly amendment.
Okay, item number 2, the friendly amendment to both would be that we adopt item number 2 but insert the language unless revised in April of 2016 or 2016 or sooner. That this is the plan unless revised in April of 2016. But what makes it slightly different than Fox's is that we come back and review, but this allows the Budget Committee the revision to move forward with this plan unless they receive a revision.
Have to be the council?
It would come back
correct.
To the council.
That's what I'm saying, but unless revised.
I would accept that as a friendly amendment to my substitute
okay.
motion.
Correct. So no. I understood it to be unless revised by judicial counsel upon receipt of the April report.
Correct, but this is how we move unless revised in April
right.
of 2016
okay.
by judicial counsel. And that's accepted?
That would be accepted to the maker of the substitute motion.
And of the second.
So, before council is the substitute motion, which indicates accept all recommendations 1 through 7. However, item 2 is modified to include that this rollout, A through D, in these years, is accepted and considered unless revised by the judicial council upon receipt of the April report of data and the methodology.
Could you back that last sentence up so I hear it again?
Pardon me?
The last sentence. I didn't quite catch it.
The amendment by Judge Anderson?
No, you're just your last sentence. You were reading it. I didn't catch it. About the
April 2016?
Yeah, we're definitely coming back on April 2016. There's definitely going to be a report.
Correct. And this is the rollout unless revised. If that report in April 2016 causes us to change our decision about years 2, 3, and 4, we leave ourselves a safety valve.
Yes.
That's the motion as I understand it. I see heads nodding from the makers of that motion.
Can I get clarification from the maker
sure.
of the
yes.
amendment?
Yes.
No amendments are friendly. It's part of the motion.
Okay.
Part of the motion.
Well, and he accepted, yes.
We've moved
Thank
to.
You. Thank you, everybody. But clarification from somebody. So when we come back, I guess one of my concerns is that it will become, like, I don't want it to go on to just the information and. That this is something we're actually going to be before us and we're going to discuss it again in this depth again. Is that your understanding what you're doing?
Would you like to address first? Since
as I would understand it, any subsequent changes to the work model have to come back to the council. And so those would result in a modification of the funding formula if, in fact, that was required under modification.
And it would come back through executive and planning, and
yes.
we would review it, and we'd make that decision, consent, or discussion.
And the basis of that is in the event that things aren't ready at the April 2016 meeting and we can't move forward, they at least still have a plan.
Yes.
However, the intent is April of 2016, we get back together to see if B, C, and D should still move forward as is or if there should be some different course of action.
Just out.
Yes.
Thank you. I appreciate very much Judge Buckley and Mr. Fox's comments. And I think we're getting to the importance here, and that is that there's a commitment by the council that we're going to look at this and we're going to look at it as expeditiously as possible. I don't know if I can offer a slight friendly amendment to the substitute motion, but I don't want to wait necessarily till April of 16. I want that to sort of,
sooner.
I would ask that be it. Or sooner, yeah, then that's fine. I definitely want it back by then would be my preference, but if sooner, all the better.
On or before?
Thank you.
Mr. Fox, you good with on or before?
Absolutely.
Okay, we're good.
I'm about to move the previous question, but I won't do it.
So, so all in favor of the amendments to the substitute amendment that resulted in a motion that indicates that years 2 through 4 will come back before this body with a report for consideration at that time of the workload model and the data, and it will be a discussion by this council whether we move forward with the years 2 through 4 as enumerated. It will be subject to a robust, I'm certain, discussion, and that's when we will consider it. And I hope and invite in back all those who gave public comment today to help us make that decision. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you to all of you who came here and give us your time and your expert opinion on this issue. And thank you again to Judge Earl and Sherry Carter for your close look and hard decisions and good recommendations.
Chief,
I'm going to let council know. Wait, two things. We
Chief,
are deferring from our agenda because of the time concerns. Items J and also item M. That leaves us two action items. Yes, Judge.
Just to the record's clear, the substitute motion passed and the original motion became moot.
Thank you. I appreciate that with clarification on the record. We're going to stand in recess for about 30 minutes, and at that time we will reconvene to take up the other two matters. And I'd like to stress to all members, we want to stay within our time frame of 2 to 2:10 because of airplane reservations. Thank you.